Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It's Saturday. We're looking back at the week. We're looking forward tomorrow to two very unhappy anniversaries. We're going to be spending most of the show on Waco and the Oklahoma City bombing, and, of course, a small mention of Patriots Day. Before that, though, a couple of things here. Just looking around the mainstream media dial today and looking back at the last week at the various journals. Let's see. Chemical Physics Journals reporting active thermitic material discovered in the dust from the 9/11 World Trade Center catastrophe. The New England Journal of Medicine reported that the high percentage of deaths from the American military operations in Iraq are women and children. The White House memos say we torture kids, and the mainstream media, corporate media, is reporting that an ugly woman can sing. And that's kind of a breakdown about what's going on and who's saying it and what's being said, talking about the dumbing down of America. There are so many important things going on, and the corporate media, you just look at it and you wonder, you know, not only is it an insult to the intelligence of Americans that they think this is the stuff we're going to be interested in, like the Octomom and her problems. I don't care. I don't care about the Octomom anymore. Okay? And yet, the corporate media seems to feel we can be dazzled and distracted with all of this. And worse, I'm kind of wondering, how does this make us look to the rest of the world? You know, on a week when it has been revealed for all to see that the U.S. government has been torturing children by locking them in metal boxes with insects, and yet the corporate media says, oh, this wonderful lady could sing last night and everybody loved her, and the Octomom this and all the rest of that. Really makes us look pretty silly, I think, to the rest of the world here. Getting into some more serious stuff here and some things that we are seeing again in the corporate media. CNN yesterday, notice it's just after income tax deadline and after the protests are all over, and CNN is starting to hem and haw and sort of get us all prepared for the fact that our federal income taxes are going to double. And they started off with a little commentary about why taxes have to double and pointed out something we have been telling you here for weeks and weeks and months and months. All of this government debt is eventually going to be dumped on you, the taxpayer. And what this commentary was saying is government debt is simply a deferred tax increase. And so what's been going on definitely for the last 6 months and actually for years before that is they are taxing you, the people who don't have money, in order to pour trillions of dollars onto Wall Street. That's their solution to the economic crisis. And it's going in the wrong direction, and I'm grateful to say I am no longer the only person who is saying that. More and more voices are joining the chorus saying that propping up the banks and financial systems is not going to fix the economy. You fix the economy by picking it up from the bottom, by bringing back high-paying jobs for working and middle-class Americans, bringing back our clients, bringing back our customers. Stop harassing people at the airport gates. After that phone call that we got earlier this week, I'm getting tons and tons of emails from people all over the world who have tried to come to the USA on tourism, and they get maltreated by the TSA, and they say, I'm never coming back to the United States, or I'm never coming back to Hawaii, as long as TSA is there. And these emails are not being discarded. I am collecting them all together. I am forwarding them to our tourism authority. I was very surprised when the Star Bulletin ran my letter saying the TSA is a big reason our tourism is in crisis mode. People are beginning to listen, and they're beginning to realize that the same government that is dumping all of this additional taxation on us is at the same time crippling our ability to pay any of it. It's a double standard. Now, if you were listening to the news just before the show, the IRS says they're going to step up enforcement on taxing barter. See, the Internal Revenue Service considers that if I trade you a basket of oranges for a basket of apples between our two farms, that that represents taxable income. And I'm not entirely sure how accurate that is because, after all, I have had a loss of the basket of what I traded out. And so it's a swap, and it's not profit. And a tax on income is supposed to be a tax on profit. But if I'm not gaining a profit, why is it taxable? Unless it's simply taxing the activity and taxing the transaction and taxing merely the activity itself. Which, if you really think about it, that's what all of this taxation is. What is deductible? Business expenses. If you're spending money to make more money, that's cool. But if you're spending money on yourself, the money that you have to pay your rent or your mortgage with, the money that you buy food with and you buy clothes with, and that you spend on your medical costs, none of that's deductible. You're taxed just for being alive. If you break all those deductions, what is deductible versus what is not? It's all about serving the economy. The things that are good for the economy, you get a deduction on. But taking care of yourself or treating yourself well or making yourself feel better or look better or feed yourself better, that is all taxed. You are taxed just for being alive. That's where we are right now. And I don't think the IRS can enforce barter because too much of it simply goes on at a very personal level. You know, hey, I need a box of pencils. Okay, I need a box of staples. All right, here you go. Why is that taxable? If I am giving something of value and getting something of equivalent value back, why should that be taxed? And what this is, it is a sign of the desperation that the government is in. They have spent themselves and borrowed themselves into a hole, and I have been saying, going all the way back to the article I wrote and posted many times at What Really Happened, our nation is in deep doo-doo. Our government is in so much debt, all of the income tax being paid by all Americans doesn't even come up to the interest. And that the only way the government can perpetuate itself is to start massive tax increases, and this CNN opinion is the first volley. See, what they're going to do is they're not going to come out and just announce it all at once. You're going to start seeing little pieces in the corporate media saying, well, you know, it's going to be inevitable. You might as well get used to it. And they're just going to, over the next several months, they're going to slowly build up this idea that all of us are going for the good of the nation and the good of the economy in order to save the country from the trouble that it's those dastardly subprime mortgage borrowers all did this to us. And they're going to dump the blame on the citizens in order to guilt us into going along with a major tax increase. And they're talking about doubling the taxes. Doubling. Those of you who actually did your taxes this last week as opposed to filing an extension, you know, look at that number of tax you paid. And not just any check you had to send in. Look at that total tax that was withheld from your wages and salaries over last week. They're going to double that. We're already taxed too much, and they're going to double it again. And they're already telling us, we will not get anything for this increase in taxes, because all of it is going to repay the loans to the Federal Reserve that were dumped all over Wall Street. And even the head of TARP, they had the lady on the Daily Show a couple of nights ago, and she said, they don't even know where it's all going. The Federal Reserve won't even say who's borrowing all these trillions of dollars or what collateral has been pledged. And it's just amazing. It is a complete ripoff of the American people. And it's going to continue until you put a stop to it. The government has no reason to stop. They're getting campaign donations and lobbyist dinners and hot and cold running interns and whatever else their puerile little minds want to keep the pleasure running endlessly in Sodom on the Potomac. They've got no reason to stop. The system works for them. And the corporate culture of America at Wall Street and the banks, it works for them as well. So they're just going to go on putting on their dog and pony shows for you, the gullible American taxpayer, until they bleed you dry. And when you've got nothing more left to give, when you are homeless and destitute in the streets, then they'll just bulldoze you off into the landfills and the ocean because they don't want to have to look at you anymore. You're of no use whatsoever. This is a government that's been torturing children. You think they're going to really care about you? And the fact that your kids are missing meals and you can't afford dental work or medical work anymore, they don't care. They torture children. That's their mindset. They think it's cool. It's amazing. By the way, I don't know if you were listening, but yes, I actually pay attention to the commercials on this show. The last commercial just before we went to air was yet another IRS Problems Resolution Service. It's probably the only part of our economy that's growing right now. Our businesses that help you renegotiate your debt or try and work through that complex system of IRS paperwork that is so bad, even CPAs are making major mistakes with it. So that seems to be the only business right now is billions of dollars to fill out paperwork and billions of dollars to read the paperwork, and that's the only part of the economy that's still functioning right now. We're going to take a break here for some commercials. If you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And one more time, if you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231. Jared is in the control room today, twiddling the dials, valiantly keeping all of these shows at Genesis Communication in line and on the air and reaching out to the public. Now, speaking of the public, we're talking about the economy right now. Two more banks were closed last night. American Sterling Bank of Sugar Creek, Missouri, and the Great Basin Bank of Nevada in Elko, Nevada, were shuttered by the FDIC at a loss of only $84 million. It's amazing how our sense of proportion has changed. We're looking back at, you know, trillions of dollars spent during defense in the 60s and realizing that certainly compared today, that doesn't seem like it's a whole heck of a lot of money, with the federal government basically making commitments to the tune of $12.8 trillion pouring on to Wall Street. And eventually, if Wall Street is not able to recover that money, to basically dump it back onto all the taxpayers. And if you think about it, we're going to pay for it anyway, one way or the other. There's this wonderful line in the book and movie, The Name of the Rose, Umberto Eco, a very fascinating writer, and he's written a lot of very interesting books, not only The Name of the Rose, but Foucault's Pendulum. And in Name of the Rose, he says, has this wonderful line, says, the poor are always made to pay for all. And it is a very profound and simple statement. So here's the deal. Let's take the automotive companies as the example. The government gives them $12 billion to an auto company. It says, you got to get back on your feet and you got to pay us back the money. One of two cases is going to happen. The automaker is going to fail anyway, in which case that $12 billion gets added to your eventual tax bills. Or the automaker does succeed in getting back on its feet and it starts selling cars again, and then it has to pay that $12 billion back to the U.S. government. Where does it get that money? It raises the prices on its cars, or it lowers the quality of the car, and it cuts other areas out. It cuts the health care for its workers, or whatever. It has to come up with the money out of the people, out of the customers, out of its workers, in order to pay it back. So one way or the other, the people are going to pay that money back. And so it's a terrible direction that we're going in. Personally, I think Barack Obama and the White House are doing everything wrong. And they, I know because of the soaring Dow, they're convinced, what Obama was saying, there's a glimmer of hope. Okay, screw hope. I'm tired of hope. Obama is starting to sound like the captain of the Titanic saying, you know, my feet are dry. I don't see what the problem is. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Renee in North Carolina. Aloha, Renee. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I agree with you. The last thing I want to discuss is Octomom. But actually, I think Susan Boyle is an enormous opportunity to open dialogue on some subjects that are kind of taboo in our culture, because it makes us feel shameful and not too good about ourselves. And it's kind of like some of the deep, dark secrets that even people in Truth Radio won't go near. And, you know, and it's how we treat people that are simple, good, but plain. People like Susan Boyle, and not all of them have an outstanding voice that will rescue them. The thing is, what I found, you know, it was really telling about her is when all this fame hit her, she didn't say, well, oh, I get to get a mansion or I get to get a new car. You know what she said? I won't be lonely anymore. If that didn't tear your heart out, the thing is, and supposedly she struggled with anxiety and depression. Well, you know, when you're bullied, that'll make you anxious. And when you're lonely, that'll make you depressed. And the thing is, but I bet there's some files somewhere that have her instead labeled with some sort of mental illness, because we blame victims, not the perpetrators, when you have a culture that is predominantly run by predators. You know, because, you know, do you ever stay up late at night worrying about the Down syndrome cabal taking over the world and bombing the hell out of you? No. The most dangerous people on Earth are the people who are very smart but lack character. Those are the ones who can wipe us all out. And those are the ones who are in control. And I just think Susan Boyle is right now a great opportunity for us to examine ourselves and possibly make ourselves better people, because people go stuff like, oh, well, that's human nature.
Okay, well, now, let me cut in on you here a little bit, okay, because we're almost to the end of the segment, and I got another caller waiting on the line here, and I want to clarify something. I don't have a problem with Susan Boyle getting out there and singing and winning prizes and improving her life at all. And I admire her for having the courage to do so, because I know a lot of people who are very pretty and very talented, but they don't have the courage to get out there and do anything with it. That being said, while I applaud Susan Boyle right now, my comment was that the corporate media is choosing to focus on her in order to not report on other things that are really much more germane to our immediate lives. Susan Boyle, as wonderful as she is, does not directly affect my life. And personally, I don't need to reexamine how I interact with people of different backgrounds and capabilities to myself. Our society, for all the talk about non-discrimination, there are all kinds of discriminations that are sort of tolerated, like discriminating against people who are ugly, discriminating against people who are fat is still considered. I mean, the airlines are now charging more money if you weigh too much to get on an airplane, all kinds of discrimination. And we know that people who are obese are generally, it's not a question of choice. There are chemicals in our food that can make you fat. There's all kinds of medical situations. So Susan Boyle is a wonderful story, and a lot of people can derive inspiration from her. But the corporate media is choosing to use her as a distraction because they don't want to report any more details on the deteriorating economy. They don't want to go into any more depth on the torture story. They absolutely do not want to touch the fact that evidence of demolition has been found in the World Trade Towers. And so Susan herself is wonderful, and I applaud her, but she doesn't affect my life directly, and the corporate media is not reporting on the stuff that does affect my life directly, which is a government gone completely out of control that is using lies and deceptions to start wars. They're already rattling the sabers at Iran and North Korea again. That's the stuff that's going to kill our children in the near future. And Susan Boyle really doesn't have an impact. She's inspirational. I will grant you that. But she's not affecting the lives of ordinary Americans, and she's being used to not report on the stuff that actually is. Renee, we're going to let you go because we're at the end of the segment. Thanks a lot, and please call in again. Thomas, welcome to the show. I'm just going to say hello here and then ask if you can stick through the commercial break until we come back for the next segment.
Great. I'll do that with you.
All right. Fantabulous. All right. So we're coming down here to the end of this segment. We're going to have some commercials here for a little bit. And just real quick, I saw this in the news. You're not going to believe this. The Catholic Church, also financially strapped, is returning to the selling of indulgences, which means you can spend $300 on a hooker on Saturday night, go to church and spend another $200 on Sunday, and still get into heaven. Isn't that a wonderful deal? We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to go back to the phones in a minute. We got callers just coming in and loading up the lines here, but I was checking the email during the break. This one just came in. Read this morning on the news that the IRS was looking at cranking the crushing vice on folks by starting a new program to ferret out those who've been forced to live by barter. Funny, I hear you reporting on this on your program exactly as I type this. For the first time in my life, I was not able to pay my federal taxes in one check this tax day. Just had to apply for Minnesota food stamps. stamps. They talk about the good of the country. I thought we were the country. But alas, it is sadly the corporation called the U.S. that is the country. I'm ashamed to be an American. Your opinions are exactly like mine in most areas of life. Thank you, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and we're hearing this more and more. I really do think that first-time delinquencies on income tax hit a new peak this season. I knew that last year, the last time I got some statistics on this, one out of every five households was already in trouble with the Internal Revenue Service, and now they're talking about doubling taxes. I mean, they have to. The federal government has spent itself into a huge hole, and the federal government does not make any money, doesn't sell any products, doesn't do anything, unless it goes out and, you know, conquers another country and tries to steal their money, which hasn't worked out all that well in either Afghanistan or Iraq, I might add. So the only way they can get money is to extort it from we the people. And they're going to go on doing it until we the people stand up and say enough is enough is enough is enough. We're going to go back to the phones. Thomas in Sweden, aloha. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Aloha. Good morning. I was just thinking you mentioned the people who can't pay their taxes. Well, this makes them all eligible to be in Obama's cabinet.
Yes, it does.
What I was talking about, recently I've heard a lot of activity, people talking about Article 10 of the Articles in addition to an amendment of the Constitution of the United States, which reserves the powers to the states and to us, we the people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they did a lot of this back in the 1860s prior to when, perfectly legally, as far as I can understand, a number of states said, no, we are going to leave the Union. Now, I combine this with the frightening aspect that President Obama is often compared to Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
During Lincoln's presidency, some 600,000 Americans died in combat, and they were shot and fired at by other Americans.
Yeah, they were. I mean, it was a huge, huge mistake. And a lot of people, I know when we're raised in school and everything, we're taught it was about freeing the slaves and the slaves were the issue. That was the excuse. The real issue was states' rights versus the encroaching federal government. And in the years leading up to the Civil War, the federal government was continuing to expand its authority. It was attempting to basically undermine the sovereignty of the individual states. And some of the states started saying, look, you know, this is not what we signed up for. We're a loose confederation. We're not a large central tyrannical ruling body. We're not supposed to be. We fought a war against the royalty of Britain, not to set up a new American royalty. And, it was about this time that I forget exactly when the original 13th Amendment vanished, which, you know, said no royalty in the United States. But, the states were going through all the legal measures to say we are going to break off and form our own country, as we have a legal right to do. And most legal scholars do maintain that states do have a fundamental legal right to leave the Union at any time they feel like it. Lincoln said, no, I'm going to keep it together. And, he issued his own currency to get away from the banks in order to fund the Civil War. And he used the issue of slavery to get the Union soldiers to basically march into these other states and bring them back into the fold. If slavery had already been outlawed in the United States, the Confederacy would have succeeded because Lincoln didn't have another issue with which to motivate the Northern armies. The Northern armies would not have gone into the South to say, okay, we're going to conquer them and bring them back so that Washington can continue to collect tax revenues from them. It would have turned out completely different. I believe there was a quote somebody actually found where Abraham Lincoln said that he was opposed to slavery, but that if maintaining slavery would have kept the Union together, he would have been perfectly happy to do it. So
yeah, I've heard that one too.
Yeah, it was never an issue about slavery or personal rights. It was just about keeping the country together into one chunk and one tax base. And what is really amazing is if you look at all the amendments that were added to the Constitution right after Lincoln's assassination, and you will see that it was a reassertion and consolidation of federal power, including the amendment that really curses us to this very day, which gave the federal government the right to borrow money and forced the states to repay it, and the states had no say about whether that was done or not. That was really the amendment that gave the federal government this incredible financial power over the states. That, in turn, led to the formation of the Federal Reserve and the income tax and the mess that we're all in today.
You can even see it in the semantics, because this is when people start speaking of the United States is rather than the United States are.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. That was a very subtle change in the language. Now, the situation is here. I know we're already starting to hear hemming and hawing about secession. The governor of Texas was talking about it the other day, and he backpedaled immediately. But there are active secession movements in several states, including this one right here in Hawaii. But here's the point. If states were to break away and secede now, Barack Obama does not have a strong issue like slavery that he could exploit to trick the armies of the Union to march into the seceding states and reconquer them again. He would just have to say, go, you know, bring those people back into the fold and make them slaves again. That's going to be a very, very hard sell when you're talking about Americans firing on other Americans, because we are consciously much more unified than we were in Civil War times. Back in the Civil War, where there wasn't telephone or telegraph or internet or television, everybody felt pretty isolated. And so people living just 5 miles away from you were total complete strangers that you wouldn't care about. And you wouldn't see them, and you wouldn't see the slaughter. It's very, very different now. You know, it's one thing to try and control the media coming out of the atrocities in Iraq, but if the war is happening right in front of Americans, in their streets, in their front yards, in their schoolyards, in the shopping malls right in front of them, you're not going to be able to hide a civil war from them. And they're going to have a very different reaction to it than they did during the last one. So I think if there is a secession movement, I think if there's a major economic crash, and I still think one is coming, I think we're going to see the United States start to break apart, and the Washington, D.C., you know, deities, if you will, demigods, as they see themselves, will not be able to hold it together, because they don't have that issue that Lincoln had to bring it all back together and to motivate the Northern armies and say, yes, it is right and just and moral, and God wants you to march into these other people's states and stomp them into the dirt and bring them back.
Burn their farms to the ground like Sherman did in Georgia.
Well, have you ever read Mark Twain's The War Prayer?
No.
All right, I'm going to put it back up on whatreallyhappened.com today. This was a piece that Mark Twain wrote. You need to remember, I mean, he served in the Confederacy, and then he deserted, and as he put it, then the Confederacy fell. That's why he went out to California and became Mark Twain, and writing, he was basically on the lam from the agents of the Confederacy who were very rough on deserters. And he wrote about war in The Private History of a Campaign That Failed, and he was very, very anti-war. And he wrote this piece, The War Prayer, and he gave it to one of his friends, and he said, don't publish this until after I'm dead, because this is the truth, and in this society, only dead men can tell the truth. So even back in the time of Mark Twain, he realized there were certain lines you were not allowed to cross and do well. I will put that up on this next break at whatreallyhappened.com so you can come in and read it. It really does tell the story of what war, especially civil war, is really all about and why it is something to be avoided. Okay?
And I know you've got other callers. I just appreciate your work. And I know you're not a believer, but you're in my prayers, and so is Claire.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And we got to take another break here. Thomas, I'm going to put that up on the website right now. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go back to the phones. Glenn in Maryland. Aloha, Glenn. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. How you doing? Love this show. I wanted to just bring up three things. No one's talking about the Leo, about Leo Wanter. I don't know if, even if the guy exists, but there's a thing out there called the Leo Wanter plan. I'm just wondering, is there a connection between these missing millions and billions of dollars going overseas and the Wanter plan? And then the second thing is, you know, I'm a working class Englishman who became a U.S. citizen. So I've been kind of brainwashed to believe that every man should have a master, as in a crown and aristocratic superstructure. So I'm proud to be a U.S. citizen. And don't you think that the U.S. government needs to do what it's got to do to maintain law and order? I mean, you're only going to need a snow forecast and everybody's fighting for milk in the grocery store. And then the third thing is,
okay,
have you read Patrick Buchanan's book, Churchill, Hitler, the Unnecessary War? And could you read it? And could you critique it on the air?
Well, okay, that's it. Well, basically, going back to everything that you said, the Leo Wanter, I mean, there have been a couple of stories put out there about things called NESARA, the National Economic Stabilization Recovery Act, and it's a lot of wishful thinking that somewhere out there there are good politicians attempting to bring all this money back in. I know the Leo Wanter story involves this story of this hidden cache of money that if it were brought back in and poured into the economy would fix all of our problems. And I think these are simply stories that are put out there to try and convince Americans to sit on their rear and pretend that life is really a TV drama where if we just sit patiently till the end, in the last 2 minutes of the show, everything will resolve itself. The Lone Ranger will ride over the hill with Tonto. Batman will show up and bitch slap the bad guys, and all will be well. But it's really a dodge. It's like what Barack Obama is doing when he says, have hope and have faith, things will get better. It's just another excuse to try and tell Americans, sit still, don't do anything, don't stand up, don't try and change the world for yourself to make it better. We'll take care of it for you when we feel like it. And the situation there, it's just another excuse to try and convince people not to do anything at all. And, you know, I don't believe in fairy tales. I don't believe in Superman. And I don't believe in these mysterious National Economic Stabilization Recovery Acts or Leo Wanter trillions that are floating around out there that will make life for us all wonderful whenever it finally resolves. It's just another con game and a dodge. Now, as far as is the government not justified in doing everything to maintain law and order, well, I'm sorry, that's kind of what Hitler was doing in Nazi Germany, and for that matter, Mussolini was doing in fascist Italy, and I don't think it worked out very well either for the Germans or the Italians or for the respective countries. There has to be a balance between, you know, taking care of the population of the country and taking care of the private vested interests. And under the republic that was originally set up by the founding fathers of the United States, there were businessmen, you know, who by dint of effort and creativity were making money and doing very well. And they basically set up the country. And then there was the rest of the working class people. And there's always this war between, you know, who's really setting the policy. And the reason the Constitution of the United States was set up the way it was is because these businessmen who set up the United States of America recognized their own frailties and weaknesses and understood that too much power concentrated in the hands of too few people ultimately destabilizes a society. And there comes a point where the government can be screaming law and order and law and order, and what looks like law and order to the government is tyranny to the people. And at some point, the people start fighting back, and that's when things really get bad. And unfortunately, one of the things I was hoping these tea parties were going to do this last Wednesday was send a message to the U.S. government that we've really hit that breaking point where they shouldn't push any further on the American people. They didn't get that message. You know, the corporate media was trying to split us up and saying, oh, it's a right-wing plot, and it's a left-wing plot, and it's skinheads, and it's just neo-Nazis, and it's anti-government extremists. Like being anti-government when you've got a government that's admitting to torturing children is a bad thing. You know, I'm proud to be anti-a government that tortures children. I don't see anything wrong with that, to be very honest. The government didn't get the message. You know, we're starting to hear that hemming and hawing about having to raise taxes to cover all this money that's being poured on Wall Street. So, you know, we're on this road to a conflict. And the government will always say it's maintaining law and order, even as they're beating on protesters with the sticks and hitting them with tasers and showering them with tear gas. Is it really law and order, or is it political repression?
Mike,
okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just waiting for you to respond about Pat Buchanan's book, Unnecessary War.
Oh, okay. Well, I read part of it a while back. I haven't read the whole thing, and so I'm not gonna critique it on the basis of a partial
read. Okay. Well, let me ask you then a bit more. I was going to push you a little bit on the Leo Wanter thing. First of all, is there a person in existence called Leo Wanter, and is he dead or is he alive?
I'm not really sure at this time because, frankly, I didn't consider it worth pursuing once they started talking about, you know, all of this thing about he's got all this money set aside and so forth and so on. It just it was too soon on the heels of the Nasara hoax. And
I don't know what that is, but the story goes, supposedly, that this Leo Wanted out there, and he worked for Reagan to basically collect millions of dollars to destabilize the ruble, and that money is sitting around somewhere. And my fundamental question is, if that is the case, is all the money that you're saying is the taxpayers now paying to go overseas through the banks, through the bailouts, through the derivative issue, is it going back to pay money owed that Leo Wanter and Reagan collected in the early 80s to destabilize the ruble? Is that fantasy, or is there any basis of fact in that?
I think that's probably a fantasy, because if Leo Wanter collected this money together, you know, then why do we need to send more money out there? You know, it's
good
basically
point.
Yeah, it's not like it's
unless
a debt.
It was spent by somebody else.
Oh, well, it could have been spent by somebody else if there was anything out there. I mean, we all know that large pools of capital are collected together to use as weapons between nations. But, you know, the problem, you know, we're hearing about all these super notes that are put out there that are being blamed on North Korea. And a lot of people are saying, well, it's just an excuse to cover the runaway inflation in the United States. They're trying to claim it's now a super international plot of super counterfeiters. And, you know, and goes back and forth. It's hard to know what's really going on because there are so many people lying, especially in the corporate media and the government. But the Leo Wanter and the Nasara stories appear to be planted hoaxes. And again, the goal is to get people to just sit still and do nothing because a savior is on the way somewhere out there. Glenn, we're going to let you go here. We're almost
okay,
at the top of the hour.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that. No, I don't think the government is justified in doing anything that it wants to maintain law and order. I mean, we've got a government that's already torturing people. What happens when they decide they need to torture Americans to deal with the domestic terrorist threat? Are they really dealing with a domestic terrorist threat, or are they just trying to create a climate of such fear that nobody will speak out? Somebody sent me this interesting story where Iran is talking about a death penalty for bloggers critical of the government. And everyone's saying, ooh, bad Iran, no freedom of speech. And I agree on that issue. But Iran is even admitting they actually can't police all of the blogs because Iran is a very computer literate country. And they, you know, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of blogs. They simply can't read them all. So by putting out a death penalty, they're hoping to simply scare people into not criticizing the government online. And at some point, we'll probably start seeing that here in the United States. All this talk about listening to our phones and reading our emails, the government physically can't do it to everybody. They're just trying to give you the idea that it's possible in order to try and scare you into staying silent. It's all political repression. The government will say we're maintaining law and order, but if they're not obeying the Bill of Rights, if they're not conforming to their constitutional limits, then it's not law and order anymore. It's dictatorship and repression. All right, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. When we come back from this next break, from the news break, we're going to be talking about the events, the anniversaries of tomorrow. It's Patriots Day tomorrow. The actual holiday for those states that observe it will be Monday. But we're going to talk about Patriots Day. We're going to talk about the assault on the church at Waco. We're going to be talking about the Oklahoma City bombing and all those other things. So stay tuned. We'll be back from the news here in just a few minutes. Aloha, America.
Thank you. The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show, hour number two of our Saturday program here. Before we get into anything further, I just want to catch up on some of the news that's coming through and some of the email. First of all, about indulgences. I am a Roman Catholic, and I'm hoping for prepaid indulgence cards. I have plans of needing one of those shortly after 8 p.m. local time when What Really Happened ends today. I will have to write our German Shepherd Pope Ratzo and suggest perhaps three forgiveness of sins for, let's say, a fiver, and even free if original enough. Every time I hear the phrase original thing sin, I think back to Eddie Izzard, and he says, poking a badger with a spoon. Oh, my goodness, that is original, isn't it? And so, yes, original sin. Yes, that's very original. A little more serious, though. You will remember back during the G20, a gentleman, a newspaper seller by the name of Ian Tomlinson, was accosted repeatedly by police, was not even in the protests, just walking from where he was working, trying to get out of the area, was knocked to the ground twice by police. The second time involved the use of a nightstick, and he died on the street. And the official story was, well, he suffered a heart attack, and we're not really sure the heart attack had anything to do with the maltreatment by the police. It's just one of those amazing tragic coincidences. Well, there's been an autopsy on him, and they found out he did not die from a heart attack. He succumbed to internal bleeding. The attack by the nightstick triggered, broke something inside, and he bled out into his abdomen and died from that. So he was murdered by police brutality, and everyone's saying, oh, well, gee whiz, I guess the cops are bad again. And yes, they are. And this goes right to the heart of why, what I was saying before the news break. What the government may insist is law and order may just be brutality and repression against the people. I am sure that in medieval times, flogging the wretches publicly and burning the witches at the stake was considered law and order. In the United States, we had judges hanging people in Massachusetts for the crime of witchcraft. I'm sure they thought that was law and order. I don't think so. We're going to go to the phones real quick. Dave in California. Aloha, Dave. What's on your mind today? Is Dave not there?
You there?
Dave's not here. No.
I'm trying to be here. Hello.
Hello. You know, it's that giant mutant hamster that's in that mixing board, and he's not doing his job. So no more radioactive cookies for him.
Am I here or not, Mike?
Yes, you're here. You're here. I hear. Go ahead.
Okay. Fine. I just have a brief update for you on the SSRI story thing. I know it's off topic.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you might be interested. Okay, well, I've done some analysis, and just talking about the murder-suicide, murder-attempted suicide, and suicide-attempted murder categories as a lump group, and this group from SSRIstories.com, there were a total of 216 total events. Mm-hmm. Out of these 216 events, there were 576 deaths and 149 injuries. All of these people were on Prozac-related type drugs. That would be selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors and selective serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, which are similar. Anyway, of these total events, there were 576 deaths and 149 injuries, and interestingly enough, 52 of them involved female perpetrators. That's 24%, and that's mm-hmm. predominantly mothers killing their children and themselves.
Boy, that's tragic.
That's very scary, and yeah. I mean, you know, and a lot of it is listed as postpartum depression. And one more glaring issue, and then I'll get off, and that is mm-hmm. that I noticed toward the end of 2006, 2007, suddenly it became, I was looking at my graphs, and suddenly the graphs for Prozac and Paxil and all that dropped precipitously, and I couldn't figure out why until I talked to the lady that ran the site. And she said that, yeah, around that time, suddenly pressure came down hard from the drug manufacturers to stop saying things like Prozac and Paxil and to just use the catch-all phrase of antidepressants, medications for depression, that sort of thing. And so, in fact, it's still going up. It's in a rapid rise, and I think we're going to see a lot more of it, especially with all apparently it's triggered by stress in a person's life, lose their job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Family breaking up, that kind of thing, and they just attack whatever it is that they're obsessing on, And they're the most vicious, god-awful type things you can imagine. You know, a woman throws herself in front of a train with her two kids. You know,
yeah, it's amazing. And I was noticing, even before you mentioned that, about the pressure coming down from the pharmaceutical industries, I'd noticed in these last several rounds of mass shootings and everything, and I'm asking the pointed question, were these people under treatment for depression? And nobody seems to know. It's not being reported. Apparently, the rule has been handed down from on high that there's going to be no mention of these antidepressant treatments anymore, because the goal is to blame the gun, the gun. And this other issue, because it threatens the profitability of these large pharmaceutical corporations, it's simply going to go away. And, right. You know, it goes all the way back to that Fox News lawsuit over the synthetic bovine growth hormone, where the court said the news media can fire any reporter who refuses to lie when told to do so. And so we just know from a point of, point of legal fact, the corporate media has a legal right to lie to us all and to fire anybody who works for them who tries to tell us the truth. And so on the basis of that alone, you know, we need to realize things are still being hidden from us.
Right, and on the issue of guns, let me just quote you a couple of the ones I pulled up. Father used an axe to kill his wife and three children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the daughter bites mother to death. You know,
ooh, that, yeah.
I mean, these people are in intense emotional pain, and it raises the question: what is really a dangerous drug? I mean, if somebody shoots heroin, you know, they might steal your stuff so they can get another shot, but they're not gonna, you know.
Well, most of the people on heroin I've ever seen tended to be sleeping more than anything else. It's the meth that'll drive you really, really crazy. And of course, that was actually invented as a military drug, believe it or not. And they're still giving it to our troops. I mean, if you wonder why the American pilots are shooting up weddings and blowing up trash dumpsters.
Yeah.
Is because they're hopped up on these pills to keep them awake and flying for long periods of time. All right, Dave, we're going to let you go here, and I agree, the SSRI and the antidepressants are a major problem, and it's not being given the coverage it needs to be, because the agenda is to blame the guns, to blame the guns, to blame the guns. And we know these medications, these psychiatric medications, they're not doing what they're supposed to. The chemistry of the brain is very complex. We don't understand it, even begin to understand it in all its complexity. And we're pouring all these strange chemicals in there and wondering why strange things are happening. Now, I want to get on to tomorrow is April 19th. It is Patriots Day. Why is it Patriots Day? Well, it's the anniversary of the battles of Lexington and Concord, which were the start of the American Revolution, in which we, the American people, stood up and kicked out the last batch of tax-happy bastards who wouldn't listen to us. And if you really think about it, the parallels right now between what we were dealing with in 1776 and what we're dealing with right now are amazing. We had a government that was taxing us all into poverty. The money was not being spent for the benefit of the American people. It was being siphoned off for foreign wars and to enrich favored individuals. The laws of the country were being changed to force us to do our business with a select group of individuals, to limit our choices, to not allow us the freedom to go out and do business with other individuals. We had to only do business with these favored companies. It's like the situation with the pharmaceuticals, to get back to this SSRI issue. It wasn't that long ago where Americans, responding to the extraordinarily high cost of medical care in the United States, could go to foreign pharmacies and get their prescription medications for a much, much lower cost. And the U.S. passed a law saying, no, you must take your business to the American pharmacies, because, you know, we know the American pharmacies have much safer and purer and better quality product than the Canadian pharmacies. Actually, it turned out the Canadian and American pharmacies are both getting their medications from the same factories in China. So it was protectionism. You will do business with our favored cronies and not with anybody else who's charging you less money. And we had the same thing back in 1776. We had to buy our tea from the East India Tea Company. We were not allowed to import tea from anywhere else in the world. And, of course, the East India Tea Company had a huge tax on it, which is why a bunch of people threw it in the harbor, to sort of make the point, we're not going to drink the tea you force on us anymore. And that's why America's a coffee-drinking company. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Patriots Day, the battles of Lexington and Concord, the assault on the church at Waco, and the Oklahoma City bombing. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Tomorrow is April 19th, Patriots Day, the anniversary of the battles of Lexington and Concord that launched the American Revolution and kicked out the last batch of tax-happy bastards who wouldn't listen to what the American people needed and wanted. It is also, sadly, the 16th anniversary of the final assault on the church at Waco, Texas, the Branch Davidians Church. And I've noticed there's this TV channel on cable. They laughingly call themselves the History Channel. And I used to watch them back when I thought it really was history, but it seems more and more that it is the reinforcing the official myths and fables channel, certainly when it comes to things like Waco. And I noticed all day yesterday they were running shows about bad, evil cults and, you know, all those wacko anti-Americans out there, and they're all nut jobs, and basically the same propaganda saying that anybody who doesn't absolutely salute the American flag, there's just got to be something wrong with those people. You know, and this follows more along the lines of this nonsense about how returning veterans from the Iraq War are a terrorist threat to the United States. I mean, our government really has gone paranoid. They see enemies everywhere, and unfortunately, they're looking at you right now. But to get back at Waco, in order to understand the tragedy of Waco, in a nutshell, it was a public relations stunt that got out of hand. And it all goes back to a group called the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And now they're called the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. And why this one group got to be put in charge of all the fun stuff remains to be a mystery. So you just see these guys saying, well, let's smoke a cigar, get a drink, and go out and shoot stuff and blow it up. And during the run-up to Waco, in like the 2 years before that, the BATF had gone from simply being a paperwork bureaucracy, where their role was to issue licenses and permits and oversee the collection of tax revenues on alcohol and tobacco and firearms, and they decided they wanted their own enforcement division. So they bought a bunch of guns and a bunch of black Nomex, and they got everybody dressed up to act like they were their own FBI, and they proceeded to go out and start conducting their own raids on what they viewed as illegal gun stores, gun operations, illegal distilleries, people who were selling tobacco without the tax stamp on it, and they were making mistakes left and right, the classic ones, kicking down the wrong doors, innocent people got killed. And the U.S. Congress was responding to all the complaints about the BATF's heavy-handed tactics and the innocent people being killed and having their homes and lives and businesses ruined. And they were coming up on budget hearings for the BATF, and there was serious talk in Congress about cutting the funds for BATF's enforcement division, and telling the BATF to go back to just shuffling paperwork, which is nowhere near as much fun as kicking down a door, and allow conventional police and FBI to carry out the necessary raids. And the BATF didn't want to do that. They didn't want a budget cut. They didn't want to give up their black Nomex and their M16s. And so they needed a publicity stunt. They needed a raid that was going to be worthy of headlines, that was going to make them look really good and, more important, really essential, so that Congress would feel political pressure from the public. Oh, yes, look what heroes these guys are. We can't cut their budget. They're doing a valuable service. And so they picked the Branch Davidian Church in Waco, Texas, as a target. And the reason they did is they knew there were a lot of guns on the premises. And you're going to say, ooh, guns in a church. There's got to be something wrong with that. Well, it may seem a little strange, but let me give you the background story on that. When David Koresh took over control of the church, the gentleman he took it over from had been actually not a very nice person. And there was actually a meth lab on the premises. And when David Koresh took over the Branch Davidian Church, the first thing he did is he called the U.S. Marshals. And he said, guys, I'm in charge here now. There's a meth lab. Come and take it away. And Koresh was actually on good terms with local law enforcement. He was even on good terms with the local BATF. And this is really kind of the interesting thing. 9 days before the assault on the Branch Davidian Church, 9 days, just a little more than a week, David Koresh went out target shooting with the local BATF. The BATF brought the guns. Koresh supplied the ammunition. And they went out, you know, Texas good old boys, went out and, you know, plinking and target shooting and trying out each other's weapons. It's Texas. There's a heavy gun culture down there. If the BATF had really had an issue with David Koresh and his church, that would have been the time to arrest him. But then it wouldn't have been newsworthy. You know, oh, you know, David, you're under arrest. We got to take you home with us. Oh, all right, let me call my lawyer. End of story. No headlines, no newspaper, no political benefit to be applied to the upcoming congressional budgetary hearings. So, with the meth lab gone, you know, passing the collection plate wasn't going to cover all the expenses of what was essentially a large communal living community. So, how the Branch Davidian Church made their money to pay their bills is gun shows. They would buy old, broken guns, they would refurbish them, repair them, clean them up, and they'd go to other gun shows and resell them. That was how they made their money. That's why there were guns on the premises. That was their business. And I know a lot of you are going to be saying, a church trading in guns, that seems strange. Well, yeah, it may. But look at all the churches that have legalized gambling called bingo to raise money. You know, back in the 1970s and 80s, there was a group called the Children of God. They changed their name. They've got another name today. But back then, they were called the Children of God. They brought back temple prostitution. The women who attended that church would go out and sell themselves sexually and then turn the money over to the church. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. That was the reason guns were at the Branch Davidian Church. So the BATF said, ooh, this is going to be newsworthy. A church full of guns and we're going to raid it. We can turn this into this incredible danger and threat to the American people and we're going to go in and save them. And then Congress won't cut our budget, and we get to keep our black Nomex and our M16s. So the BATF decides they're going to raid the church, and because they're so desperate for publicity, they call all the reporters in the area and say, look, we're going to go over, and we're going to kick down the doors of this church, and they've got guns, and it's going to be really great news, and you can get a byline and national exposure if you come and do the story. And that was their first mistake, because one of the reporters they called was another one of David Koresh's shooting buddies. And he called David Koresh and said, the BATF is coming over to like, kick down the doors on your church. And David said, well, okay. I mean, all of our weapons are legal and all of our paperwork is in order. And so when the BATF showed up, David Koresh just opens the door, and he's immediately shot. And the situation went downhill from there. Now, if you go to whatreallyhappened.com, up in the little menu near the very top, and you'll see there's a whole bunch of stories listed, and one of them is Waco. And if you go in there, you're going to see a page, Waco, Who Shot First? And in that page are some of the few surviving photos of the first moments of the BATF raid. And it is obvious, looking at the pictures, that all the shooting is being done by the BATF. They're not being fired back on, and I'll go into that in a little more depth when we come back from these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America.
Did that again. 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
I keep doing that. That's 800-259-9231. 31, and Jared is in the control room twiddling the dials. I don't know why I keep stepping on top of Mr. Announcer on that one. That's just my bad. Not enough coffee yet this morning. All right, we're talking about the U.S. government assault on the Branch Davidian Church at Waco, Texas, and the gassing of a church full of women and children to death with a poison gas that is actually illegal to use on enemy troops in time of war. And we're talking about how what started out as a publicity stunt for the BATF turned into a complete debacle and such an embarrassment that the only solution from the U.S. government's point of view was to kill everybody, bulldoze it all over, cart off the remains and bury it in an undisclosed location, and then create this fable and myth about wacko, crazy, religious gun nuts that set themselves on fire. And therefore, hey, the government was absolutely blameless. And looking back from this much wiser time, when we know because of the stories about Saddam's nuclear bombs that our government does indeed lie to us about very serious matters, and the corporate media does help them do it, it's perhaps not as great a surprise or a shock what happened in Waco or later in Oklahoma City. But at the time, it was a national scandal. Most Americans, 90% of Americans, said our government would never hurt a church. Well, yeah, we do. Our government tortures children. So, no big surprise here. Now, getting back to the actual evidence, if you're looking at our Waco page at whatreallyhappened.com, there are a bunch of photos from the initial moments of the assault. And there are two things to point out. For one thing, there are some close-ups of the bullet holes in the front door of the church. And for those of you who've done any shooting, if you look at the clean edges of all those holes, there are no splinters pointing back out, which means all of the shooting was coming from the outside going in. Now, the other thing to look at in all those pictures, I mean, the BATF showed up with a bunch of cars and a bunch of trucks and these horse trailers covered with tarpaulins carrying their troops. And if you look very carefully at the photos, there is not a single broken window in any of those cars. There are no holes in the metal. There are no holes in the cloth tarpaulin over the horse trailers. There are no guns being fired from inside the church back at the BATF. There's one guy who got shot in the leg. One BATF guy got shot in the leg, was later revealed he shot himself by accident climbing up a ladder, which, given the record of the BATF leading up to this whole fiasco, was certainly consistent behavior. The official story is that the Branch Davidians had 50 caliber sniper rifles, the ones that fire the machine gun round, like the Barrett 50. I fired one of those myself. It's a heck of a kick, and it leaves a very large hole. And contrary to what you may have seen in film and TVs, car doors and car bodies are not bulletproof. You cannot stand behind them and be assured that bullets are not going to come through and hit you. In fact, I think Mythbusters did a show about that. Any reasonable hunting round, unless it hits the actual engine block of the car, is going to come right through both sides of the car and leave a very visible hole, none of which can be seen anywhere in the cars or trucks of the BATF. And as I said before, all it's going to take is one bullet into a glass window, and the glass is going to shatter, and you're going to see broken glass in the cars and trucks. Those are not seen. The BATF was doing all the shooting. A little further down, there is a photo of the armory, if that's what the official story was, the inventory of the guns. Here's why the Branch Davidians were not able to fire back effectively at the BATF. The working guns were out at a gun show that day. Everything that was still in the church were materials still being worked on, or they were being stripped for parts for the other guns. And if you look at this photo of the inventory of the Branch Davidians' weapons, and you'll see it's a burned-out room, the ceiling has caved in, it's burned to ash, it's piled up all around everything, the guns are still stacked neatly against the wall because they weren't working. Logic tells you that the Branch Davidians would not have returned the guns nicely to the armory and stacked them against the wall before the fire. They were, in theory, would have been using them to defend their homes against this forced invasion. And obviously, nobody put the guns there after the fire because you'd see footprints in the ash. So the inescapable conclusion is that the guns that were still on the premises were not functioning. And this is also why all the bullet holes are only going one direction. Now, this whole sorry standoff ended when the FBI came in with their tanks. And remember the bullhorn screaming, this is not an assault, this is not an assault, as the tanks were knocking down the walls of the church. And they just poured in this CS tear gas, and it was mixed with this dispersant, and I don't remember the name of the dispersant, but it's the same chemical they use to melt and bend that clear plastic over salad bars, and it will melt your lungs. And they just poured that in until everybody was dead. It's also highly flammable, so it may have hit an open flame, and that's what triggered the huge fire that burned everything to the ground. And here's the deal. Here's the deal. In the autopsies that were performed on some of the Branch Davidian victims, and autopsies were basically stopped, and then amazingly, what an amazing tragic coincidence, the refrigerated vault where all the remains were kept, the refrigeration somehow malfunctioned and wasn't discovered for like a couple of months, and so there was nothing left to do any forensics on. But with a few autopsies that were done, none of them showed smoke inhalation. And that means they were dead before the fire started. And that means they died of the CS gas and the dispersant before the fire began. So it was a horrific, horrific thing to do to a church. It was the gassing of a church full of women and children with a gas that is illegal to use on enemy troops during time of war. And that's what the U.S. government did. Whether or not you think the government started the fire or the Branch Davidians started the fire, the fact is that the U.S. government used a poison gas on women and children that is illegal to use in warfare against enemy troops. And that is absolutely the story there. Now, 2 years later, Oklahoma City, we are told that Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols blew up the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City as revenge for the crimes of Waco. And this is a little absurd for a large number of reasons. First and foremost, under public pressure, under public outrage, Congress was finally going to convene hearings on what had happened in Waco, Texas. And they had subpoenaed all the documentation, all the paperwork for the initial raid and for the FBI's ultimate taking over of the situation and the final fire that killed the final gassing that killed everybody in the church and the fire that destroyed all the evidence. And they'd subpoenaed all the paperwork, and it was all collected together in one place. And it was collected together in the Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City on the day of the bombing. So the official story is that out of a desire for revenge for Waco, Timothy McVeigh blew up all the evidence about the government's role in Waco. That's the official story. It sounds absurd, and it absolutely is. There is so much wrong with the Oklahoma City bombing story. First and foremost, the bomb itself in the truck couldn't have done the damage. There were two different experts. There was a blast effect study done at Eglin Air Force Base. They tried to duplicate knocking down a federal building with an AMFO truck bomb, and they couldn't do it. AMFO, ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, or in this case, racing fuel, nitromethane, it is a low-velocity explosive. It's kind of on the border of fast burning as opposed to truly explosive. It cannot form a shockwave like a high-velocity explosive like C4 can do. It's very low velocity. It's a compression wave rather than a shock wave. It's used for earth-moving applications is really what it's used for. It's a construction, land-clearing kind of an explosive. And it's in very, very common usage. But a truck full of it was not going to have the force necessary to knock down the federal building. And the reason is federal buildings everywhere, including the Murrah Building, are built much more sturdily than normal buildings. It was the same story with World Trade Center 7. It was overbuilt. It was built to withstand bombings and attack. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network.
And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
Okay, I guess Mr. Announcer is done, and I can talk now. Welcome back to our show here for the last segment. Boy, this show has gone by, and I'm not going to have anywhere near enough time to go into Oklahoma City in as much depth as I'd like to. I do have a couple of personal anecdotes to share. Before we do that, though, we just had an email come in. It said, I have been a daily reader since I found your site just after 9/11/2001. I've been listening to your show for about 10 months now, usually live on my iPhone with Wonder Radio. You are amazing. I thought I knew a lot by tuning out the MSM and focusing on your site, but your segment on Waco was totally unknown to me. I am a critical thinker, so I will take what you said and research it to make sure you're accurate. But most always, you were correct, and my research was a waste of time. But I'd rather be a critical thinker than a Michael Rivero ditto head. I hope you understand what I mean. Absolutely, I understand what you mean. I don't want ditto heads. I think it's a diminutive. I don't understand why Rush Limbaugh's listeners like to say, I'm a ditto head, I'm a ditto head. It's a diminutive. It basically says, I am not an independent thinker. So yes, do your research. You know, what really happened is a starting point from which you go out and find what you need to know to make those good choices. Now, so thank you very much for the call. And by the way, you can, if you have an iPhone, you can listen to the most recent podcasts of the GCN shows through the iTunes application, but there are a lot of these wonderful little internet radio tools out there, and it really is an amazing phenomenon. Now, getting back to Oklahoma City bombing, again, up at the top of whatreallyhappened.com, there's a little submenu that says OK City. If you click it, you're going to go to the main page. This is one of the more well-developed, in-depth sections of the website, and tomorrow, on the anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing, I'm probably going to be putting some of the subpages on the main page just to call attention to them. But I want to mention two personal anecdotes related to the Oklahoma City bombing. First of all, when I was still living in Southern California, I worked briefly at the CBS Los Angeles affiliate KNXT in Hollywood, and I got to meet and become acquaintances with Connie Chung, who was a news anchor there. She later went on to national network news coverage, and she was in Oklahoma City. And it was rather interesting because she was interviewing the fire chief for Oklahoma City, and she asked him about a rumor that was persistent throughout the city that the fire department had been deployed around the block of the Murrah building before the bomb went off. 24 hours later, she was fired from her network news job. I mean, that's got to raise some red flags right there. Now, the second story is, as long-time readers and listeners are aware, I have this wonderful wife I'm married to by the name of Claire. The minister who married us was in Oklahoma on the day of the bombing, and being the good soul that he is, he drove down to Oklahoma City, and he volunteered to help dig for survivors, and he had three odd stories. The first was, with obviously a sense of emergency and the building has collapsed and people are dying, you know, screaming. You can hear them in the rubble and the ruins. And he had to show his ID 6 times to the FBI before being allowed to dig in the rubble for survivors. That's how tightly controlled that environment was. They wanted to know everybody who was there and keep a record of who got in and who might have seen anything. The second is our minister confirmed stories that other people had said that there were people from the government who were literally stepping over wounded people crying for help, trying to remove certain items from the wreckage of the building. And finally, the one that really made people stand up and notice is our minister reported that there were more people from the government who were there with rolls of black plastic, sheet plastic, and duct tape, and they were taping over the ends of some of the load-bearing beams. And the sheet plastic was not strong enough to prevent the collapse of any more debris. It was very, very thin stuff. Its only purpose was to conceal the ends of these load-bearing beams. And we finally found a photograph that confirmed that this taping over had, in fact, taken place. And if you go into the study done by General Benton Parton, where he looks at the ruins of the building and the effectiveness of a truck bomb, and he basically concluded there had to be cutter charges inside the building that brought it down. It was a controlled demolition from within, the same as World Trade Center 7. And one of the other subpages that you're going to find on the OK City page at whatreallyhappened.com is basically a huge list of scans, actual scans from official U.S. government documents that confirm repeatedly there were bombs found inside the Oklahoma federal building. Later on, the government and the corporate media would say, oh, no, it was all mistaken identity. It was practice this and practice that. And what's really interesting, I mean, there was stuff that came out in the aftermath of the bombing about how the BATF were warned not to come to work that morning. There was this woman who lost her children in the daycare center, and they were going to interview her on TV and say, oh, the poor mother, she's the victim, she's lost her children to these dastardly domestic terrorists. And she got on there and she says, I want to know why the BATF was warned ahead of time. And they got her off the air real quick, but it had been a live feed. They couldn't do anything about it. They couldn't get it back. And they, like, immediately canceled all of her any kind of financial aid and dealing with the aftermath of the tragedy. And they just stomped on her as hard as they could. The U.S. government literally went out and conducted a blast effect study to confirm that a truck bomb could bring down a federal building and actually just succeeded in proving exactly the opposite. No matter how full you pack that Ryder truck with ammonium nitrate fertilizer and fuel oil, or in this case racing fuel, it doesn't produce the energy to bring down a federal building. And as I was saying before we left the last segment, federal buildings are not built to the same standards as ordinary commercial buildings that you're familiar with in the cities. They are built twice as strong. They have extra fireproofing. They have extra bombproofing. They are very sturdily built. They are meant to be used in time of civil war as fortresses against the people. All federal buildings are built that way. They are extra strong, extra heavy, extra thick. They're designed to withstand precisely this kind of an attack. And yet the Murrah federal building just, boom, and the truck took it up. Now, there is audio, acoustic evidence, two separate recordings, one from a lawyer's dictation tape and the other from the Oklahoma Water Board, that indicate that 4.2 seconds before the truck bomb itself went out, there was another detonation, a high-velocity supersonic detonation that preceded the main truck bomb. This is backed up by one of the survivors from the Murrah building who had been living in California before he came to Oklahoma, and he said he felt the building shake, and he thought it was an earthquake, and he had time enough after that shake to get under his desk. And then the main explosion happened. And he said if he had not had that 4.2-second warning, that he would have been killed because he wouldn't have been under his desk. It's kind of hard to argue with that one. There's also the rather strange story of a gentleman by the name of Everhart. He's the BATF's expert on home-built truck bombs. And here's the really weird part of it. For the 8 months prior to the Oklahoma City bombing, he and his crew were out there working in the Utah deserts, building and blowing up truck bombs to see how it can be done and how best it can be done. And what makes this an amazing coincidence is on the day of the Oklahoma City bombing, Everhart was not in Utah. He was in Oklahoma City. He was one block away from the Murrah building when it was destroyed, supposedly by a truck bomb. In fact, he's the guy who got on the phone first and filed the first official report saying, yes, the Oklahoma City building has been destroyed by a truck bomb. What an amazing coincidence that the BATF's top expert on making truck bombs was in Oklahoma City when the BATF offices and the evidence of Waco contained therein were destroyed by supposedly a truck bomb. And finally, before we get to the end of this, the other story you need to look at is supposedly Tim McVeigh was hanging out at a place called Elohim City. It's portrayed in the media as this hotbed of white separatist Christian identity, fanatical, racist stuff. During the trial of Carol Howe, one of the FBI's informants, she let slip the fact that Elohim City was founded and was at the time being run by a known FBI informant. Halfway between Elohim City, where Tim McVeigh was supposedly making his plot, and Oklahoma City itself, there is a military base. And quite by accident, a private airplane pilot flying over that base spotted a very odd camp on the ground in which was a Ryder truck. And he took pictures. Those pictures are on the website at whatreallyhappened.com. What was the Army doing with a second Ryder truck at a secret Army compound just a week before the Oklahoma City bombing. That's it for our show today. We'll be back on Monday at our usual time, 5 p.m. in the evening. Share this show with your friends. Tell them to tune in and call your local AM and FM stations and say, we want that nutcase on the air around here. So until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive very carefully. There continues to be more and more road rage out there. We're certainly seeing it here in Hawaii, and a lot of people are getting hurt. So until Monday, aloha, America.